This is a show about losing. Over the course of the quarter, we've taken a broad view of what it means to lose in the context of history. This was, of course, on purpose. Defining losing, or loser, in a more expansive way is helpful for discussion in a few ways. First, it allows us to discuss a wider variety of historical subjects. If I were to restrict the definition of loser to apply only to situations with a clearly defined winning side and losing side, like sports or criminal trials, I would be leaving out a lot of individuals and groups who may have experienced the effects of losing, or been in a losing position, but just happened to be in a situation where they weren't clearly labeled as a loser. Second, using a broader definition allows us to consider why individuals or groups who are often seen as losers might be winners when viewed in a different light, and vice versa. Third, the broad definition allows for discussing losers who don't compete or even actively interact with others, like inanimate objects, for example, musical instruments. Given that this is the last episode of the quarter, I wanted to use this episode to do a short review or recap of the different ways we've thought about and defined losing over the past 10 weeks. My hope is that this recap will shed light on the variety of ways individuals and groups can be historically disadvantaged, and to maybe raise awareness for the fact that losing is often hidden beneath the surface of a story. I think it's important, in whatever community you find yourself, to figure out who is losing and why. But it takes work to figure out who the losers are. Sometimes it's obvious, but sometimes you need to dig beneath the surface. The task of recognizing and aiding losers is crucial, but like many crucial tasks, it's hard. Hopefully, this show has done something to make that task a bit easier by both identifying clear historical losers and searching for ways that losing might be hiding beneath the surface. As I recap the quarter, I'm going to be using the phrase "we learned" a number of times, and I just want to preface that I don't mean that in a patronizing way or anything like that. I genuinely mean it collectively, in that I learned a lot about losing while making this show, and hopefully listeners learned something about losing as well. So, together, maybe we learned. So, in the first week, we discussed Chinese gymnast Shang Chunsong. She was an athlete who placed fourth at a number of major international competitions, including the Olympics, and never won a medal at a major international competition. On the surface, she might seem like a loser, given that she repeatedly came up just short of the podium throughout her career. But remember, Shang had a very difficult life story. She was born into poverty in rural China. She would walk multiple miles to school each morning while carrying her brother, who had a congenital vision problem, on her back. She frequently got sick during her gymnastics training due to a compromised immune system induced by malnutrition as a child. And what we learned in that episode is that losing, especially in competitive ventures, has to be viewed in context. Whether or not someone is a loser has to be considered with their background in mind. Like I said in that episode, where Shang may have lost in the medal count, she won in perseverance and sheer strength of will. In the next episode, we discussed a fellow named John Barron. Now, Barron lost in a pretty obvious way. He lost a court case, and he lost various appeals of that court case, including an appeal heard by the Supreme Court. But the important aspect of John Barron's story wasn't the fact that he lost in the courtroom, but rather the consequence that his loss had for others through its effect on legal doctrine and political activism. John Barron lost a case where the Supreme Court more or less said that individual states in the U.S. had no obligation at the time to protect any individual rights listed in the Federal Bill of Rights. States were free, in theory, to cruel and unusually punish, to unreasonably search and seize, and so on. But Barron's loss in this case set off a 150-year litigation effort from rights advocates to ensure that these fundamental liberties in the Bill of Rights, such as the right to a jury trial and the right to be free from unreasonable searches, would ultimately be recognized by state and local governments. So in that episode, then, we learn that one person's loss can catalyze major victories for others when those others perceive the one person's loss as motivation to inspire change. Now, this, of course, does not mean that we should intentionally sacrifice others for causes we think are just, but it does mean that when we see individuals and groups around us who are losing, we can use their losses as incentive and justification for altering the status quo. The next episode discussed female classical music composers. The classical music composition world, historically, has not been much of a meritocracy. Standards get played because they're standards. European composers get their music played because they're European. Old stuff gets played because it's old, and men get their music played because they're men. The large body of classical music composed by women, that is both A, remarkable music, and B, rarely played, is evidence of this historical inequality. In this episode, we learned that individuals and groups can lose by being forgotten, perhaps intentionally so. Obvious negative attention isn't necessary to put someone in a losing position. You don't need to disparage someone or physically harm someone. Sometimes ignoring them is enough. We also learned that the effect of a loss in the past can compound over time. The fact that female composers of the past were ignored at the time they were composing meant that their music never became standards, and because they weren't standards at the time, they aren't played in concert halls today. In the next episode, we discuss the imprisonment of Japanese Americans in the U.S. during World War II. We learn two things about losing. First, we learn that even when losing is extremely obvious, sometimes it needs to be continually discussed nonetheless. It's quite clear that Japanese Americans imprisoned during World War II were oppressed. To say that they lost is putting it very, very mildly. And I do think that the story of Japanese American concentration is reasonably well covered in the U.S. education system, at least in the classrooms that I've been in. However, some historical losers can never really be discussed enough. Some historical losses are so atrocious that we need to do everything we can to stay constantly vigilant and avoid repeating those losses. The second thing we learned from that episode is that in order to understand how and why individuals or groups lose, we need to listen to their personal testimony. We listened to a variety of interviews with Japanese Americans who themselves were placed in concentration camps during World War II. We can do our best to understand losers, and amplifying the stories of losers is an essential element of fostering change. But it's nonetheless true that no one can fully understand the position of the loser but the loser themselves, and we should try to let them tell their own story whenever possible. In the next episode, I discussed black soldiers who fought for the Union in the U.S. Civil War. Black individuals were initially barred from serving in the Union Army at all, and when they were allowed to serve, they were placed in segregated units, denied access to military leadership positions, and given unequal pay. The obvious irony is that black soldiers were racially discriminated against as they fought a war which sought to end the most heinous institution of racism in American history. Again, we learned two things about losing from that episode. First, we reiterated the point about testimony that I just mentioned with respect to Japanese Americans. In order to try to understand how and why individuals or groups lose, we need to listen to their personal testimony. And in that episode, we covered a number of letters written by Black soldiers to their family members during the war. The second thing we learned from that episode is that it's often the case that progressive gains, wins, are obtained by parties who retain non-progressive or exclusionary practices, the kinds of practices that create losers. If the status quo is a society thoroughly conditioned by racism and exclusion, then it's not altogether surprising when even the most progressive movements engage in discriminatory practices. And such was the case for the military recruitment and treatment of Black soldiers during the Civil War. Finally, I spent a few episodes discussing the role of the viola in classical music. The viola has been historically forgotten in a manner somewhat similar to the forgetting of female classical composers that I mentioned earlier, and many of the lessons about losing are similar. Lack of recognition in the past can lead to a lack of recognition today. Losing and being forgotten can be synonymous. But we also learned one more thing about losing, which is the fact that some individuals or groups, such as viola players, wear their loser status as a badge of honor is not a reason to continue treating them as losers. I think that communities should try to have as few losers as possible. Losing is bad. So, even in situations where losers take it well, we should do our best to make so that they don't have to lose in the first place. On that note, that's all I have for this quarter. The process of making this show was both fun and informative for me, and I hope the process of listening was the same. The rest of the hour will be filled with some music, as usual. This first piece is Amy Beach's Gaelic Symphony, performed by the Detroit Symphony Orchestra. A while back, we listened to the second movement, and I figured we might as well listen to the whole thing today. Amy Beach was a spectacular American composer who lived from 1867 to 1944, and her work does not get nearly the recognition it deserves, and this Gaelic Symphony is a good example of why she deserves more recognition. Please enjoy. Thank you. Since there's only a few minutes left, this last piece has to be a short one. I'm going to replay a piece I played earlier in the quarter, also by Amy Beach, simply because I think it's a nice one to end the quarter on. This is Amy Beach's Bursus, performed by Stephen Hoff on piano and Stephen Isserlis on cello. Please enjoy. And that is all for this quarter. Thanks for listening.